In this podcast, you'll hear me get excited about a few molecules, pyrrole and the heme molecule, and we'll wind up discussing or understanding why your poo is brown. What gives poo its brown colour? Now, to start off with, pyrrole is such a fantastic little molecule. So it's benzene, so it's six carbons in a ring. This has four carbons and a nitrogen. That's four plus one is five. It forms a little pentagon. So it's like a really short and snug, cute little benzene ring, but only smaller. And with one less double bond in it, if you want to say it. So it's got two electrons floating above and below in these above and below the surface of this little tight little ring. It's a really cute little molecule, pyrrole. It's just a fantastic little thing, and you can make heaps of great chemistry with them. So let's go again. It's C4N H5 pyrrole there with the delocalized pi electrons. So if you actually squish out carbon so it can't actually zigzag around the place, that is, put in a double bond situation, it flips on to the sp2 configuration. It's got a p orbital which sticks up and below. This p orbital is a way of saying it's an electron that's shaped like a p orbital, and it sticks above and below the plane of bonding. So this means that this is sort of like a soup of electrons, free electron, a free molecular bound electron, sort of just sticking above and below the actual the molecule. So it's quite interesting to think about, and it's one of the things which I get quite excited about, especially when the electrons not just hanging around in the bond and making its way up into the more electronegative compound. Now, nitrogen is a bit more electronegative, or it can attract electrons more than carbon does, because it's got a extra proton, so it's a bit more positively charged. Oxygen is the king of these molecules. I suppose even fluorine. The more proteins and in, the more pulls electrons along. So if you kind of like to imagine, it's pyrrole is sort of like a mini, sort of shrunk benzene ring, but those hydrogens, the negative electrons which are above and below are actually swept slightly up towards the nitrogen. So if you imagine it's a made from the center is made from fruits that you can imagine, but let's say the carbons are mandarins and the nitrogen's an oxygen. Nitrogen's an orange. Nitrogen and oxygen, that's going to get you super confused. And you slap a piece of bread on both, the actual piece of bread is going to lip up a bit or concentrate a bit around that oxygen. So you've got one orange and two and so on, four mandarins, and you slap a piece of bread below and above, and that bread's going to actually seep up a little bit above the be attracted to that nitrogen. It's quite an interesting molecule to actually contemplate. I'd be loved to see it displayed in the supercomputer. Of course, the heme molecule is made of four of these pentagons, and so they're arranged like this. If you can imagine a square, and on the corner of those squares facing inwards, with the nitrogens facing inwards, you put your pyrroles. So there's four pyrroles, and of those, you connect each pyrrole to each other by a carbon with a single double bond in it. And this is cluey. And so what that does is you actually make it a flat box-shaped molecule. It's pretty amazing. So a heme molecule is a flattened molecule, and it is square frame shape. And when you actually see it in space filling, it looks like a box, a frame of carbon, and in the corners of the frame are nitrogens. And it looks a pretty impressive molecule, the heme molecule. So it's got this carbon which basically looks square. The heme molecule looks square, and it is in actual fact square. But it's square in the corners, have these inward pointing pentagons. You should possibly go and see it if your curiosity is arranged. And inward points, that's the nitrogens point inward, so there's basically, it's like square dancing. There's nitrogens are on the inside, carbons are on the outside, and the carbons push the nitrogens have hydrogens on top of them. So it's hydrogens in the very center, then nitrogens, and then a ring of carbons. But the ring of carbons is really special because each of the bonds has got an electron sticking above and below the plane of the molecule. So heme is like this fantastic, unimaginable molecule. It's actually got a conducting ring of electrons which go right around that square because they're all delocalized electrons. So if you squash, so carbon likes to be to connect to four things and be a pyramid, but if you actually force it into a triangle so it can flatten it, and you can flatten a carbon atom with its electrons, force its bonding electrons into a plane, and its spare electron will go above and below the plane, and that will form another surface connection. So the heme molecule is absolutely staggering. So let's go over it again. There's four pyrroles, all pointing in from the edge of a box, and between those pentagons is a single carbon binding each pentagon to each other. So it's like the surface edge of the box, and those carbons are just not a single bond, they're actually, it's a double bond. And so everywhere you look, is every second bond is a double bond, i.e. there's an electron floating above and below the plane, and the entire electrons can actually swing around. You can actually push the information, pushing them all around. It's a beautiful delocalized called pi electron. And that's what we say, pi electron. It's sort of like a mini piece of graphite. Now, of course, you can imagine this as a real magnet. By the time you have it inside, you have these electrons on the inside, and you've got your positive ion. And when I say ion, Fe, and it's for different animals, it's different chemicals, the atoms you put in. I think for green blooded animals, if you squish them and they squirt out green blood, I think they've got magnesium in it. It's iron. And you can imagine the iron sits inside them. But, of course, there's a little bit more to it. The heme molecule itself sits in a hemoglobin, which is a large amount of... a globin means it's a ball, and it's a ball which actually sits the hemoglobin. And the hemoglobin sits on another... sort of a pyrrole with another nitrogen in, and this actually provides another binding site. So your iron, which Fe2, is actually got five electrons or binding negative areas of electrons binding it in. So it's positive, but it doesn't get associated with an electron. It's a positive charge, and it's sitting in this cup. The sides of the cup are provided by the heme molecule, and the bottom is provided by the hemoglobin, sticking a special pyrrole-like pentagon underneath it to make it a cup. It's sort of absolutely fantastic to imagine. So you can imagine all those electrons loose and free, ready to actually accept the iron. And so when the hemoglobin's there, the iron is there, and it has this property, fantastic property, discovered by someone else called Bohr, not Niels Bohr, but another person back around that time. Well, I think even in the 1880s, back like that. But he discovered that if you just have hemoglobin, it takes on oxygen like anything when there's, when there's not a lot of carbon dioxide. And so if you blow carbon dioxide into heme, it will release oxygen. Or if you remove the carbon dioxide, it will absorb oxygen. So what? And also there's an acidic version of that. And in terms of if there's lots of carbon dioxide, it's quite acidic. It's a bit like Coke. So if you put heme, you mix blood and Coke together, that will actually absorb a lot of oxygen. But if you then put in some baking soda with your Coke, your acid, it will release the oxygen. So it's an oxygen pump. That's what your blood is doing. So where's the situation where there's not a lot of carbon dioxide? It's when they're exposed to the lungs, the carbon dioxide. When you breathe in fresh air, the carbon dioxide leaves the blood. It changes the heme such that it allows the oxygen in, and then it goes around the body, and when it sees something which is just putting out heaps of carbon dioxide, it says, oh, I don't like this, and actually puts a lot of oxygen in there. Sort of almost detects where there's cellular respiration, and if there's a lot of cellular respiration going on, producing a lot of carbon dioxide, it adds a lot of oxygen. Sort of conserves it, brings the oxygen not just anywhere around the body, but to where the oxygen is being used. It's been used where there's a lot of carbon dioxide. It's sort of a bit hard to get your brain around, but it's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant system. So, yes, me being very enthusiastic about the pyrrole, fantastic, the electrons there. And then the heme, super, super fantastic, because you've got the four pyrroles around linked by a link, which allows those electrons to flow all around, and then underneath your heme you've got another pyrrole like stuff, except it's got two nitrogens rather than just one. So I think there must be less electrons there. Let's see, nitrogen, it depends how it's bound coming up then, but it makes a little electron cup, and that electron cup can hold the iron, and the iron attracts the oxygen molecule. Now, there's more to it than could possibly do it. To actually bind a rotating oxygen molecule, it's got to have some sort of oscillation with it, such that it removes the rotational energy. So your oxygen molecule is like a dumbbell, you know, one of those weight dumbbells, and it's spinning around, and obviously I can't imagine it sticking too well if it's spinning, so there must be some sort of process there of dissipation there. And so I sort of can imagine how the large amounts of presence of carbon dioxide can, I suppose, interfere with the ability to hold the oxygen, and therefore destroy heme's oxygen holding ability, which is exactly what you want. So when there's respiration going, you want more oxygen, more fuel to the fire. So it's almost like a detects a fire and adds, or burning respiration is a form of wet combustion, slow combustion. So when it detects the exhaust gas, it throws in more oxygen, and when the exhaust gas is properly ventilated in your lungs, the carbon dioxide has gone away. It then picks up the oxygen from the atmosphere, sort of an ideal little thing. But I promised you that I would talk through the unsticking of a heme molecule. So you can bash up a heme molecule by just getting, and don't do this, getting out a hammer and hitting your hand really hard. And when you first, or your thumb really hard, when you first hit it, your bruise will be a bit green. So, you know, there's the darkness of a bruise, it goes green. And what's happening is that those heme molecules are actually being broken apart and oxidized. And so when it oxidizes, two oxygens come in, and where there was, say, in the top part of the frame, there was a carbon. That carbon is replaced by two oxygens. And so your heme molecule is no longer a square, it's a broken box, and the top connection is broken apart. There's still pentagons, and of course the iron, so the iron, which is chelated, which means captured and encaged, says, I'm not staying here anymore, and just floats away. And this chemical, which is a heme, a broken heme with one surface broken and two oxygens, is called biliverdin, which verdin is the French for green, mate, verd. And bili means from the blood, I suppose. I don't know what bili stands for, but biliverdin. So that's blood which is freshly just injured will turn green. So if you ever hit something, your bruise will be yellowy or green. That's biliverdin. And of course, that has to be removed. So it gets removed. And when it gets removed, it goes through another process in which on the bottom end of the frame, what was a double bond gets, and one hydrogen gets an extra hydrogen on it, and no longer becomes this long, no longer becomes a square. The double bond is constrained and still keeps it in square. That double bond is gone, and so this is now a flexible single bond. So the great thing about single bonds is that they're rotary and beautiful. So instead of a double bond on that base of the frame, which is a carbon, it has a single bond, and this repels and unfolds, and your what was your box unfolds out into a straight thing. So it's like a cardboard box. You rip off the side and flatten it, so flattened stuff. And that's bilirubin. Rubin is for red, and so this is a red colour. It's actually a browny colour, bilirubin, and that's collected in your liver. So your liver is the big blood cleaner. So your kidneys suck out water and salts in your blood, and urea, which is the for the waste product of proteins. When proteins get broken down, proteins have got a lot of nitrogen in it, so urea is a nitrogen compound. But in your liver, it takes the bilirubin, and it says the thing about hemes, it's really the heme molecule, it's got, you know, heaps of delocalized electrons. So it's not water soluble. So you add it adds sugars to it to make it water soluble. So this is then put in your bile to make your bile nice and brown, and this is helps goes into your bile, then goes into your duodenum, the little section after your stomach, your broad post-stomach stuff at the start of your small intestine, and then gives poo its brown colour. So all through this process, the purines play a great part. And I suppose the amazing thing is that a lot of the brown of your purines, so your heme molecule, is firstly broken and then made flexible and then had sugars added to it. It's still there. Still inside your heme molecule is your purines, still sitting inside there when you poo it out. So that's the brown colour for it. So it's something which I just think is absolutely fantastic and beautiful. I think it's actually beautiful how the heme molecule in the blood organizes the oxygen in and out, there's two things. The way it's nice and sensitive to the carbon dioxide level to work out when it should pick up oxygen and when it should give out oxygen. It says, if there's lots of carbon dioxide here, just throw oxygen at it. But it's also the ability to, if you've got a rotating oxygen molecule, it can somehow stop that rotation and just get that oxygen molecule just to sit nice and calmly on its surface. And what's so hard about an oxygen molecule spinning? Well, because it's really small, it doesn't take a lot of energy to spin it. And so this is something pretty hard to imagine. Its rotational energy inertia is pretty small. So if you've got a big molecule, yes, you can imagine it's possible to slow it down quite easily. That's, I suppose, like a big box slowly rotating, but this oxygen molecule is whizzing around at high rotational speed. So I'm just interested about how the rotational speed is taken out of the oxygen. Hope you've enjoyed this joy. It should be called the joy of molecules, but I hope you've enjoyed this tour of the heme molecule, and I hope it prompts you to have a look at it and have a little think about this box within a box of carbon, and a box of, well, I say a frame of carbon, framing a frame of nitrogen, framing a frame of hydrogens, in which a little iron sits. However, there's a sort of a sandwich above and below of a beautiful ring of electrons above and below. It's a beautiful thing to comprehend. Thanks for listening. Keep on thinking, doing, and finally teaching science.